from the number one sports site in the world.
Yahoo!
This is Yahoo Sports Radio.
YahooSportsRadio.com.
Welcome to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
Yelovich is an own goal! It's an own goal!
With your host, Joe Maka. From Yahoo Sports and Yahoo Sports Radio.
It's five! It's a landslide!
Joe Lago and all the insiders from the FC Yahoo Soccer Blog bring you coverage of soccer across the world.
Premier League,
MLS,
Champions League,
La Liga,
Serie A,
and Bundesliga. It's all the coverage from soccer across the world.
This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
Oh, it's going in!
Right now.
He's going! The US ahead! Incredibly! Within seconds!
From the Yahoo Sports headquarters in Playa Vista, California, here's your host, Joe Lago.
Greetings, soccer fans. This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. I'm Joe Lago, editor of the Yahoo Sports soccer blog, FC Yahoo. And for episode number four, we have our own Fab Four to talk about the biggest stories in soccer here in the Playa Vista podcast room. To my right is Alex Baker.
Hi out there in soccer land.
To my left, making his debut on our podcast, is the one and only Joey Gallino.
I just personally hope I can justify the transfer business you guys did for me by being strong in my debut.
We're an MLS site, so we only use TAM money for you.
Cool.
Joining us on Skype is Leander Charlakens from New York.
I'm really going to say it's a Fab 3 plus Leander.
You're Ringo.
And also on Skype, just a couple of doors down, we won't explain why, but Shahan Ahmed.
How's it going? Yeah, I think I'm definitely Ringo. We're going to, you know, pick straws here.
You can get all of our insights and our snarky opinions every day on the Yahoo Sports soccer page. That's sports.yahoo.com/soccer in the FC Yahoo Soccer blog. We are taping on Thursday after most of the Premier League played round 28 on Tuesday and Wednesday. Fourth place Manchester City fell flat in a 3-0 loss to Liverpool 3 days after beating the Reds on penalties in the League Cup final. Third place Arsenal was hoping to rebound after losing to a patchwork Man United side, but lost 2-1 to Swansea. Tottenham had a chance to take over the Premier League with a win at West Ham, but lost 1-0. And all of this benefited the surprise leader, Leicester City, which dropped points in a 2-2 draw with West Brom, but still managed to extend its lead to 3 points over Spurs. Guys, does anyone want to win the Premier League title?
It certainly appears like nobody wants to win the league that at least has the means to try to win it year in and year out. I think this Leicester story, frankly, just personally, is fascinating. I have a big, like, it's a big obstacle trying to explain to some of my friends who don't follow the Premier League as closely as we do that this is something that's unakin to anything I can think of in the entirety of American sports. Like a team, you know, the way that American sports are set up with the tournaments and all that, like, you know, sure, you're ripe for upsets, but the way that the Premier League does it, having a team that doesn't have this kind of money, that doesn't have this kind of, you know, that was in 20th place, it was dead last this time last year, and just had to, you know, pull off a miracle escape to stay in the league, they, you know, certainly, clearly, they want to do it. Now, these other teams, I think it's kind of a comedy of errors. It's a bunch of people, it's a bunch of players and teams and you know, fan bases kind of tripping over each other to see who can outfail the other. And, you know, obviously these teams want to win the league, but you certainly can't really tell that by the way that they're playing. You know, they don't take advantage of opportunities when they're in front of them, when other teams drop points. And, you know, hey, Leicester's just sitting back, you know, saying, hey, thank you very much, because this certainly looks like it could be their year with each passing week.
Yeah, I mean, even in the 2-2 draw with West Brom, Leicester did look pretty sharp. Vardy was still creating, you know, problems. Mahrez still was doing his step overs. I think that they did perform pretty well. I mean, okay, they didn't get the result and they were at home. They probably should have gotten that result. But everything considered, when you look at the fact that they got a draw and their two closest rivals, they still end up gaining a point on them. it's something to marvel at. I mean, even on the stumbles, they're still creating a wider gap. So, yeah, if you're going to say that the other teams don't want to win it, Leicester's still doing enough to continue and go ahead.
Well, it's one of those weird seasons where it seems like almost a fluke where all of the big clubs, and we'll include Liverpool and Manchester United in that for now, are sort of underperforming, except Tottenham is arguably the only one of the big budget teams that's doing better than it should be. And, you know, you can point to a number of different things. I mean, Leicester is certainly an underdog story. I don't think there's any disputing that. But it's also the 24th richest club in the world. And that's just a matter of where the Premier League stands right now with this enormous influx of cash, where even sort of the middle class teams and the teams that should be fighting relegation have so much money now that the finances alone, I don't think, are an impediment anymore to being able to compete. It's really now a matter of who has the best run club, who has the smartest game plan. And Leicester has sort of disrupted its industry in that sense. But I think in the end, it comes down to more the failure of the other clubs to do what they're supposed to do. And I don't know if that's because their European campaigns are distracting them, because it really is the case now that there just aren't any easy games anymore, or if it's just a management issue. And I know we're going to talk about Arsenal in a minute, so that leads us there pretty nicely, I think. But it's a strange season, but I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I mean, to follow up and agree a little bit with what Leander was saying, I personally do think it is a management issue. I mean, you know, you look at the Premier League champions from last year, Chelsea. They've sacked their manager, brought in Goose, and Goose has done pretty well because he's brought some form of stability. You look at Man City, they've already told their manager he's going out, and they were the top contenders. You look at Man United, they were selling Jose Mourinho scarves, what, 2 months ago at the stadium at Old Trafford? So there's been complete disarray when you look at the traditional top clubs. And then, you know, if you want to include big spenders Liverpool, they fired their manager and brought in somebody new as well. So the only club of the traditional big spenders that hasn't replaced his manager is Arsenal. So again, we're back to Arsenal very, very nicely.
And that's the one club that probably should replace their manager of those teams.
Guys. Yeah, I mean to just little add on top of that, I mean, you look at the two clubs that are on top, and it's Leicester, whose manager has never been in any disarray because he was supposed to be in a relegation battle right now, and he's top of the league. And then it's Mauricio Pochettino, who, you know, Tottenham is backing him to the fullest. There's no doubt that he's done a great job, and his job's not in jeopardy. So stability is what's winning the league right now. And the teams that are fluttering that shouldn't be, it's because, in my opinion, because managers just, they're not getting the backing and they're not able to build on what they probably built in preseason.
If I could jump in here, too, there's a lack of pressure, and I think that Ranieri has done a masterful job at managing that. He still says, we're not going to win. We're just going to keep playing and keep winning games, and anything that happens is great. And it is already great. They're going to be in the Champions League next season. No one would have thought that. So it's already a win from a Leicester point of view, but I think the lack of pressure has really served them well.
And real quick, you know, to that point, it's almost like Leicester, they don't seem to feel the pressure. They kind of say, okay, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to – I mean, obviously they're not doing this, but it almost feels like they're saying, okay, we're going to get to this certain number of points. We're just going to keep playing how we play, and if you guys want to come get us, feel free. But if you don't, you know, we're not going to cry about it. And you look at the way that Leicester – okay, let's say – remember, they lose at Arsenal last month. So what does Arsenal do after that? Goes out and lays an egg at Man United and then obviously comes up short yesterday against Swansea. What does Tottenham do? They bottle that tricky fixture at West Ham, but still, you know, they could have – jumped into a tie for the league lead. And so it does come down to these other clubs, I think, not doing what they should be doing, not winning the fixtures, not taking advantage of the points that Leicester's leaking here and there, and they have to start doing it because there's not going to be a lot of opportunity to do that for the rest of the season.
I think that when you look at Leicester, if you had sort of assessed their chances ahead of the season, you would have probably said, if that team comes 14th, that's a good season for them. If they come 10th, if they end in the top half, that's an amazing season. If you would have sort of handed their players and Ranieri a contract before the season and said, you know, we're not going to play this season. You guys are just going to come in 10th, and that's that. they would have happily signed that, and they would have taken that all day long. So you get the sense with them that, you know, they play with such abandon because they don't have that pressure, and their jobs aren't on the line. They're all, Ranieri included, I think, having the season of their lives. There's nothing that happens now can really diminish that. Even if they lose the rest of their games and come sixth or seventh, this is still like the greatest season they will ever have. So when you have that lack of pressure and weight on your shoulders, it makes it an entirely different game, and it's a competitive advantage for them.
If I could jump on and give a little more credit to Ranieri here too, I think, you know, I've heard people ask the question, would this team be doing this if Nigel Pearson were still in charge? Because he did get the team playing well. He did get them out of the relegation battle, kept them up, and organized his team. But I don't think that they would be leading the Premier League with him in charge. I think something about Ranieri is he came in, he let them keep doing what was working, and he took the shackles off these guys and let them play some football. And that's, I don't think he's getting nearly enough credit for how well he's managed this.
It's almost, you know, a year ago, or maybe a little more, you know, he was getting run out of Greece. Because, and you know, that obviously dovetailed and then to them missing the 2014 field for the Euros this summer. I think that kind of plays into this, like maybe he didn't want to come in and upset things too much. And by doing that, it turned out to be the perfect thing for this squad. And, you know, the results on the field speak for themselves.
Yeah, I think the story of the Premier League season as pertains to a player is Jamie Vardy. His story has been well told, you know, coming from the depths of the, you know, the English football league to superstardom, setting records with his consecutive Premier League scoring streak, and it's been incredible. But is having a Cinderella in the Premier League, is that what people want? Is that a make for great football? Because like Leicester is going to finish with 70 something points, and it's not elite among when you look at past Premier League champs. Is a Cinderella story really good for the Premier League?
I think it is. I think it's, you know, to me it's like Rocky. You know, it's this team that's not supposed to be doing this is doing this, and Leicester's supposed to have lost. Leicester's supposed to have been a fluke. Leicester's supposed to have fallen off. You know, they're going 15 rounds with the champion. Whether they win or not, it's still a great story.
Yeah, this I think it's good for 1 year and maybe another couple. I think that to a certain extent, a lot of fans enjoy this sport because, you know, obviously in a fair world, everyone would have an equal chance of winning the league, and that's obviously not the case. But I do think that fans kind of recognize that, and they come for the big clubs. You know, they want to see the Chelseas and the Man Us and the Arsenals duke it out every year because they know that the best players in the league are on those teams. The best, you know, some of the most beautiful soccer being played is on those teams, at least theoretically. And so I think while this is an amazing story, if it happens too much, which I don't think it will, but if it happens too much, I think, you know, it can kind of get old after a while.
I think kind of the yin and yang of the Premier League is that I think it owes its popularity to giving you the smallest chance of seeing a bad game. Even when it's between a bunch of mid-table teams or relegation-threatened teams, you're more likely to see a good game when you turn on a Premier League game for some reason than any other league in the world, I think. I think that's what its product is. There's other factors there as well. You know, the stadiums are always full and loud. The grass is always green. The production values are the highest. It's in English. I think all of those things matter. But at the same time, we have to recognize that the more predictable the Premier League has become until this season, the better it has done. The broadcast rights just keep going up and up and up, and you know, ticket prices keep going up. Commercially, that league is just going from strength to strength. Even though the last 10 or so years until this season, there had only been three different champions. Even though Manchester United at one point, I believe, won the league 11 times in 20 years. So clearly its market hasn't punished it for being predictable necessarily. But I do think it's pretty refreshing to now have this totally fluky season. So I agree with Joey. I think to have that once and again, just to kind of remind people that it's not a foregone conclusion ahead of the season, that there's only three teams that can win it, is important. But ultimately, it seems to me that predictability hasn't exactly served the league poorly.
guys, one of those big clubs, one from London, was supposed to contend for the Premier League title. We have two supporters of that team in our midst. Of course, we're talking about Arsenal. They brought in Petr Cech to be their backstop to be that cover for all the mistakes that Arsenal would typically make along the back line. It was looking like the plan would work, but of late it has gone sideways. I'm just going to throw this out, not just to Alex and Joey, but what has gone wrong with the Gunners this season?
It's almost like misery repeats itself. It starts last summer when you knew that the club needed reinforcements at certain positions, and it was the only club out of, I think, 98 in the big five leagues in Europe that didn't buy an outfield player. Now, the Petr Cech business was a great bit of business, and he has definitely helped, and he's made the back stronger. But, you know, now he's going to miss the Tottenham game with that injury that he suffered trying to chase a goal yesterday. And, you know, Sani Cazorla is out for the rest of the season. It's just there's not adequate cover at certain positions. There just doesn't seem, you know, I think there was the I forget what the exact comment was earlier this year, but someone alluded to the fact that these Arsenal players are more concerned with, like, their Instagram photos and their hair than they are with actually winning the league. And, you know, it's a little unfair to make blanket generalities like that across the pond from here, but it does seem at times, I will say, that this team lacks the hunger and the fight. You know, you look at some of the sides in the past, you think Patrick Vieira and Dennis Bergkamp and guys like that would really let Swansea walk in yesterday and come out with all 3 points. It just wouldn't happen. And so, it has to go back to Arsene Wenger to a certain extent. We'll get in on that, I think, a little bit more here in a minute. But, you know, it's nothing that Arsenal hasn't seen before, and that perhaps is more shocking than what's happening at Chelsea right now or somewhere else that, you know, they haven't really seen before. Like, this is like a Groundhog Day that Arsenal fans can't get out of, and they want to so bad, but it seems like they're stuck there.
Yeah, it's like February comes along and it's like muscle memory. Like, oh, wait, this is the month that we lose to Barcelona and our campaign collapses. I forgot that's what's supposed to happen. And it's been happening in glorious fashion before our eyes in the last 2 to 3 weeks.
You know, there have been a lot of excuses over the years with Arsenal. It seems for you know, maybe a decade that they would lose their best player every summer. It's sometimes their best two players. And then, you know, they were building the stadium and they went deep into debt. So they said that they weren't spending as much, even though if you kind of looked at even the rest of the Premier League and the rest of the world, they were actually spending huge amounts of money. But nevertheless, that was sort of the excuse with Arsenal. And even after that, they sort of had trouble retaining their very best players, you know, with Van Persie leaving, guys like Alex Song leaving, Fabregas leaving. But that's not been the case for the last few years. They hold on to their best players now. They sign really good players. They signed Alexis Sanchez, and they got Mesut Ozil. And they're strengthening now in the summer, and they do so every summer. And it's also not really the case anymore that there's a really young core to the team and that they just need a little bit of time to gain experience and to mature and to ripen. And it just kind of seems like Arsenal is out of excuses. Like all of those factors that you could point to saying, well, they're building, they're rebuilding, the finances, the stadium, blah, blah, blah. None of that is really there anymore. So, you know, you just kind of wind up with one last explanation, and that's that the manager isn't right. And I think that's kind of where we have arrived now with Arsene Wenger, where he's had so much time and he's had so many excuses and he has had the investment. I kind of don't know where else you look when it's time to sort of apportion blame for Arsenal.
Yeah, to follow up on what Leander was saying, who exactly is doing the looking? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Because the fans have been, you know, calling for his head off and on as long as I can remember at this point. It seems that way anyway. And it seems like when it comes down to it, when the press talk to him or when the season ends and they're in the exact same spot where they were the year before and they exit in the round of 16 in the Champions League once again, all those trophy-less seasons that they had, there's no real pressure on him. He doesn't seem like he's under pressure. This summer, all he did was buy Petr Cech. Then when everybody said, hey, you should really go for a striker, he didn't get a striker. He was like, oh, I'll try Theo Walcott for a little bit. Then Danny Welbeck comes back. Credit to Danny Welbeck. He's done pretty well. But does anyone really think that Danny Welbeck is, you know, the world-class striker they need? you know, there's this guy named Gonzalo Higuain scoring a bunch of goals that Arsenal were supposed to go out and get. If they had him, hey, they might score a couple more goals that they actually need to win a league. Because I think that's the end goal, right? That's what the fans want. That's what the Gunners should want. I mean, especially in a season like this, this is the thing, that in a season where no one is really standing out, Arsenal really has been in position to win a season like this. And if they can't win a season like this, you think it's going to get easier next year when Pep comes in and the giant TV contracts kick in and all the big clubs get even more money and theoretically get more stable and get better? Probably not. And then you think Arsenal wants to spend more? Arsene is going to go and spend more money than he wanted to spend last year or the year before? Because the price, you'd imagine, is going to go up on just about everybody. So, I mean, it's kind of getting to that point where you have to wonder, what is it going to take for Arsene to be, quote-unquote, kicked out? And I just don't know who's going to do it.
Yeah, and I want to build off a point that you made there. The idea that this is the most winnable the league is going to be unless Arsenal makes a change, which it certainly, you know, we'll get in on Wenger here in a second and whether a change is coming or not or what it will take. But if things do stay the same, and at this point there's no real reason to expect them not to, given past evidence, given, you know, a decade without a trophy, and that's okay apparently, you know, Guardiola's coming to the league next year. I personally am a huge believer in Jurgen Klopp. I think a lot of us are. Like, he's going to turn Liverpool into a monster. I'm not just talking about getting him back in the Champions League. I really think they're going to win the league under him at some point. Obviously, they don't have the talent right now, but he can go out and buy it. He can, you know, make it happen. And so if Arsenal is going to stay the same, if it's going to retain the status quo, which hasn't been good enough in these other years and might not be good enough in this down year, if they can't do it in a lull, when are they going to do it? You know, are they going to be happy just printing money by charging the highest ticket prices in the league and, you know, getting that lucrative Champions League contract? They're going to be happy with that. You know, that's the question that they have to ask themselves.
You know, there's a saying that they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result. And I think that's the case. This is not a club of no-hopers. This is a club with money in the bank. And for years now, we've been saying Arsenal needs to go out, buy two or three players, and they would have a world-beating side. Wenger always digs his heels and refuses to do it.
It's really strange because he sort of has always had the mentality of a manager at a much, much smaller club. When guys like Mourinho and Van Gaal and Guardiola, etc., they come to a new club, what do? They spend 100 million euros on new players without fail. That's just kind of how you get ready for the season now. And that's only becoming truer now than ever, especially with the money flowing into the Premier League, especially with Arsenal now, like Joey said, printing money and generating all this revenue. What they need to do to be competitive, and sometimes I hate reducing soccer to that, but it's true, is to just spend money and get the best players that are out there at the moment. And Wenger always seems like he's managing a club more like Everton 5 or 10 years ago, where they just didn't have any money to spend and where they just couldn't do that and where they had to buy young and hope to develop their own players. And in that sense, he seems like he's kind of stuck in his ways and he's just not willing to do it for some kind of, some kind of principle or philosophy that he has that I'm just not sure is compatible with what it takes to compete in the Premier League today.
Yeah, so Arsenal's picked up, 7 points in their last 6 games. My question to you guys, and I'm just going to ask you to go around, is do you think the league's gone? They're 6 points off the pace with 10 rounds to go.
I'll start. I personally think it is, and I don't necessarily think it's because it's not eminently winnable and that these other teams are going to be flawless. I mean, City can't beat anybody these days. Leicester, I think we all agree, kind of has a ceiling. And, you know, Tottenham is inexperienced with this kind of chase. But the thing is, what have you seen? You mentioned, you know, the 7 points from the last 6 matches. Like, what have we seen from Arsenal to make us believe that they're going to take advantage of the fixtures that they need to win it? So I personally, you know, technically speaking, no, the league is not gone. But I certainly would not tip them in any fashion to win it.
I don't think it's gone just yet. I think if they can beat Tottenham, then I think they could be right back in this, actually. If they lose to Tottenham, then they're 9 points adrift. Then I would say it's probably gone. So I feel like they have one more chance.
I agree with Alex. I think you know, the Saturday's game against Spurs is going to determine whether they're still in it or not. You know, I'm waiting for Alexis Sanchez to put the team on his shoulders and carry them. I think that's the one thing that Arsenal's been lacking. They've been relying on Mesut Ozil for so long, or for this season, he's been fantastic overall. But now's a time where you need someone of superior skill to step forward and lead the team. And I think Alexis Sanchez is really the only guy who can really do that. It's definitely not going to be Olivier Giroud.
Here's something to keep in mind, guys, going into the weekend. If Arsenal doesn't win against Spurs, it'll be their third time this season that they've gone three games without a win. They have also had several win streaks. You know, in September and October, they won five in a row. But I just don't know that you can expect reasonably to win the league when you've had three streaks of not winning in three games. That's just too much. That's just too much inefficiency.
All right, so here is the big question. Let's assume that Arsenal is not going to win the league. They might win another FA Cup.
Good enough.
But what will it take for change to actually happen at Arsenal? Is it going to take a disastrous start next season under Arsene Wenger? Is it going to take just him saying, I'm done coaching? What is it going to take for change?
Yeah, I'll start. Yeah, it's going to take him saying I'm done, because Stan Kroenke is way too focused on the Rams right now, his NFL football team that he just got in L.A. So I think that he's more than happy to have a self-functioning club over in London that's doing its own job and has a manager that's profitable every year. And from a business standpoint, I don't think he much cares. He doesn't seem to care, because he doesn't really hold him accountable. Hasn't held him accountable for the past decade, essentially. So, yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that it's going to take anyone other than Arsene saying, "Hey, you know what? I'm getting a little bit long in the tooth. I need to move away from this now."
Joey, does that make you sad?
A little bit. I do agree with that to a certain extent. But here's the thing. I think it's actually a very simple situation. What Shahan alluded to with Kroenke being more concerned with his sports interests on this side of the pond, this continent, is very true. But I also think that kind of extends to the Arsenal board. They're not going to, you know, even if Arsene Wenger, you know, it would take something catastrophic next season. It would take, like, losses in every one of the first 10 matches or something like that to have it happen. And I just don't think that's going to happen, because as bad as Arsenal, as much as, you know, we're trashing Arsenal right now, like, the team still does finish in the Champions League every year. And therein lies the key. I really do think it's as simple as, maybe not immediately, if Arsenal doesn't make the Champions League, it looks like they will this year, but when they miss the league and the money isn't quite there like it usually is, that's enough to get Kroenke, you know, out of his beach chair and sipping his mimosa and being like, oh, wait a minute, hang on, you're not being as profitable as you have been in the past, and then looking over at Arsenal in that regard. So I do think, you know, I think an in-season change would take something extreme if it ever happens. I do think that Wenger can step down, obviously, whenever he wants to. I don't know if that's going to happen. It doesn't seem like he wants to. But I think the way to bring this down, so to speak, is to miss the Champions League. And obviously that's not something they're going to try to do, but it is something that I think that could upset the balance, the status quo, the Groundhog Day that we've been talking about.
Yeah, I think Joey hits the nail on the head there and just about takes the words out of my mouth. It seems in terms of revenue for Arsenal, the big differentiator is not becoming champions or not becoming champions. It's making the Champions League or not making the Champions League. And so long as they do that, their revenues year to year are going to be more or less the same. And I think that tends to matter as much now as results do with that club, because very clearly Arsenal is run like a business. I mean, you could tell that with the stadiums and with the ticket prices and everything. Their primary concern, I don't know if that starts with the ownership or with the front office, I suspect it's the ownership, is with money. And Arsene Wenger is delivering that money. And if he's only delivering the occasional sort of second-tier trophy, because let's be honest about what the FA Cup is now, and if he, you know, every other year, every 3 years, puts in a pretty serious title challenge, that apparently is enough.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of disagree with you guys a little bit, in the sense that I think the new TV revenue from the Premier League is going to make it so that Stan Kroenke is going to get a giant windfall of cash that he didn't previously get. So even if they don't make the Champions League, I don't think he's going to be hurting for money. So yeah, I think it puts even less pressure on just the Champions League revenue coming in, because the Premier League revenue is going to be astronomical, especially since it's kind of graded based on where you finish in the league. So as long as he keeps finishing near the top or somewhere around there, I think Stan Kroenke's not going to mind. Let's say he does miss the Champions League for the first time in forever. I think that Stan Kroenke's going to pretty much let Arsene do what he does, because he's made him a ton of cash. Arsenal does charge ridiculous prices for their tickets. And as an American owner who's pretty much, you know, hands off and just collecting checks, how can you be upset with this French guy who's making you all this money?
Guys, let's take a time out. After the break, we'll talk about the top flight, domestic league in this country, Major League Soccer, which kicks off its regular season, season number 21 on Sunday. Are you excited? If not, why not? We'll be right back.
You're listening to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast, direct from the FC Yahoo Soccer blog at yahoosports.com. And if you're looking for a sports radio morning show that is just a little bit more entertaining and has a little bit of fun, along with all your coverage of sports every morning, check out the Steve Zabin Show, direct from Yahoo Sports Radio.
Well, we go from fat Scott to skinny. Did you see Barry Bonds as hitting coach for the Miami Marlins?
I did not see him standing up. I did see him at a podium addressing the press.
Then here, take a gape at this picture right here. You're looking great, Barry. I mean, it looks like you're not on steroids anymore.
He looks like a slender old man.
Look at that guy.
That's impressive.
The incredible rise and fall, the inflation and deflation of one Barry Bonds. Look at his head.
You look like a normal size human,
Mr. Bonds. You look normal again.
You know what? Maybe now you can fit into the Hall of Fame one day.
Steve Zabin, mornings, 6 a.m. until 10 a.m. Eastern on Yahoo Sports Radio. Listen live and check out the podcast of The Steve Zabin Show, yahoosportsradio.com. It's time to get back to everything football and soccer from across the world. This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. The FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast from Yahoo Sports Radio and Yahoo Sports. Once again, your host, Joe Lago.
Welcome back. This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast, episode number 4. I'm with Alex Baker and Joey Galino here in the Playa Vista podcasting room. I'm Joe Lago, the editor of the FC Yahoo. Joining us on Skype is Leander Charlakins and Shahan Ahmed. Guys, we have Major League Soccer kicking off season number 21 on Sunday. It is our domestic league here in this country. MLS is still getting great attendance. If you want to believe the average attendance, it's more than the NHL and I believe the NBA. And as far as global soccer, all leagues in the world, it's the ninth best attended league. But if you go by the TV ratings, people still aren't engaged with MLS. I'm going to throw this out to you guys. How come more Americans don't watch MLS?
I think with those numbers, there are a few caveats that we need. First of all, when you talk about the numbers of global soccer leagues, that does put MLS sort of within the top league, but it's also behind the Chinese and the Indian league. So it's not always necessarily super significant in the sense that I think the United States is a country of large disposable income with a culture of going to stadiums and watching live sports. So I think that's really helping the league. And then when you reference the NBA and the NHL, as MLS really, really likes to do, I think it's important to note that they play in much smaller stadiums because they're indoor sports and that they have 82 and 84 game regular seasons, respectively, if I'm not mistaken, whereas MLS has 34 game seasons. So those are, in a sense, false equivalencies. But I think MLS is having a hard time getting people to watch on TV because there's no differentiator there. I think it's easier to get people to the stadium because you can't go to a La Liga game 2 hours from your house, to state the very obvious. So live soccer is something that MLS can offer that really nobody can compete with except for sort of the minor leagues like, you know, the USL and USL Pro and NASL, etc. But at the same time, when it comes to television, they have this unbelievable competition, whereas in the US, you can watch just about any league in the world broadcasted well, broadcasted widely. I remember growing up in Belgium, it was really hard to keep track of foreign leagues. You'd get some Belgian league games, but you couldn't even get more than the highlights unless you got like a pay channel. You could get a little bit of English soccer, a little bit of German soccer. But if you wanted to watch all those leagues, the German, the Italian, the French, the English, you needed like this whole enormous list of subscription channels. It would cost you hundreds of dollars a month. But here in the US, you can get a pretty basic package from your cable provider, and you've got every major league in the world. And that's just really tough to compete with for MLS.
Yeah, the other thing that I would say and kind of add on to that, I think one of the reasons the MLS is drawing those parallels with the NHL and the NBA and likes to do that is because as much as Leander is talking about the other soccer leagues around the world being the competition, in reality, the times at which these games are being played are in direct competition with the NBA and the NHL games. And clearly the audiences at home are picking the NBA and the NHL over the MLS. And I think that kind of has a little bit to do with it is they're noticing that their competition is actually not in within the sport. It's more about, you know, like last night there's a big NBA game going on. Most people aren't probably tuning into the CONCACAF Champions League instead. That's just the reality of the audience that they're dealing with. Those same fans that are watching the NBA are probably watching the Premier League on Sunday morning. And that's unfortunate reality for the MLS when it comes down to watching on television. In terms of going to stadiums, I mean, the fan experience in the U.S. is probably better than it is in most places in terms of, you know, you don't have penned in away visitors. And it's pretty friendly fanfare when you go to a stadium in the U.S.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you guys. I think it's a question of bandwidth. And I think in America, we've been watching European leagues, so we're sort of trained that soccer is this kind of thing I wake up early in the morning to do. Whereas in the evening and afternoon when MLS games are on, there's other leagues being played that Americans are more interested in. And also, as a Joe, like you, I like to go see the Galaxy. I've been to every home game for 6 years. It's a great atmosphere. But I think as a neutral, when you watch an MLS game on TV, I think it's a bit underwhelming. I think the football's getting better, yes, but it's still maybe not what you're used to if you're used to watching the Premier League or La Liga. You look around the atmosphere, and it's pretty full, and we've got great supporters groups, but you're going to see, you know, sort of one guy beating a drum, and it's going to look a little bit forced if you're used to watching the Premier League, which is, you know, much more of a spectacle on TV.
I think, you know, I kind of fit into this. I am an American soccer fan who doesn't necessarily watch American soccer that much, and I think it's a little unfair to an extent because MLS really is growing in quality. You know, like Alex alluded to it, like it's not a bad league. It's certainly entertaining. You know, it's one thing it's got for a variety of reasons is, you know, you look at La Liga and you're like, well, I can bet my life savings on Real Madrid or Barcelona or maybe Atletico these days winning the league. This year, you know, you have a lot. It's more open. There's more parity, and that's a good thing. But I also get a sense that, and I grew up playing, and you know, I would always watch like the afternoon Champions League games on TV and things like that. And I would watch the Premier League. I would watch the games from Europe, and I would kind of think to myself, this isn't ours. This soccer thing is not ours. And when you watch a game, this is, you know, fair or foul. When you watch an MLS game, at least for me, and I think, you know, some of the other people I've talked to about this. You watch it, and it sounds American. It looks American. The presentation is getting better. I really like the fact that they've hammered out TV deals so where they can have, you know, they've got that Sunday block now, which is a good thing for the league, even if the ratings won't immediately show it. People know where they can find it every week. They know where they can watch it. They can maybe plan, you know, like us, like people, not to the extent that they do the NFL in this country, clearly, but it can be kind of like a Sunday relaxed thing, you know, turn on the MLS game and things like that. But I do get a sense that this sport is best viewed, and you know, again, I'm not saying this is fair or unfair. I'm just saying that this sport is best viewed through the lens of the people who have invented it and perfected it across the pond. And you know, I'm not sure that's fair. It is a quality league, but it's kind of hard for me to explain why I haven't gotten more into it. I think that is a little bit of the surface there, though.
Like, Americans want to watch either the best or the most entertaining league. So that's how I rationalize this. And we all know MLS, because of its single entity, is never going to aspire to that as long as they, you know, control the spending,
right,
and don't bring in the big names with the flashy skills. That said, the quality of play for MLS has grown quite a bit. I mean, I remember watching a MLS Cup final maybe in 2008, and like the first touches of the guys in that game was pretty average. But now when you watch an MLS game, it is a physical league, and the skill level as far as being able to control the ball, it's grown by leaps and bounds, I think. But that said, you know, I think what's really restricting the league, and you can see from this week, just looking at comments on Lander's recap of CONCACAF Champions League from last night, people can't take this league seriously as long as it's in this weird structure that's not like the European leagues. You don't have promotion relegation. It doesn't follow the international schedule. It's restricted by these convoluted salary cap rules that no one can understand, and there's lack of transparency. So, I think there's reason for it. Look, if you're a lover of soccer, there's no reason why you shouldn't go and at least check out an MLS game. There's nothing. I love baseball. When I was living in the East Coast, I couldn't get to a major league ballpark, but I would go to a minor league stadium, and that kind of, you know, satisfied my jonesing for baseball. I get the MLS isn't up to, you know, is nowhere near the European leagues, but I think it's confounding that it hasn't grown as much as it has. Now, that said, coming out of the World Cup, we did a survey on which leagues people actually follow. Number one, not surprisingly, was the Premier League. Number two is Major League Soccer, but it surprised us, but we're not seeing it in the TV ratings yet.
I'll add one thing to what you said there, Joe. I think Americans like to watch the best, or they like to watch America take on another country. And I think the problem there is that MLS is neither.
I think the window point, too, that I agree with that, and I also think that the window that the league has, where it could be a blessing and a curse. You know, all of the leagues in Europe take place on basically the same schedule, and the MLS kind of has to fit a round peg into a square hole, or however you want to say it, with their international breaks and things like that. But you know, that said, this is a good time for the, you know, if you put it at the same time as the European leagues, you're going to get crushed by the NFL. You're going to get crushed by postseason baseball. At least now, when the NFL is not in season, it's another option, and it could work out in that regard. And to the point about the local growth, I think that I'm from Ohio originally, and when the Columbus Crew came around, they're insanely popular there, and part of that is because, you know, the MLS is kind of like, they put a franchise there which didn't really have, I mean, the professional sport there is Ohio State, to be honest, and it's really grown because even the team, when the team hasn't been competitive, it has won an MLS Cup, it was in the final last year again, but it was something to do. It was kind of a sense of community in a place, a city that didn't really have that necessarily. And I think, you know, that's kind of the thinking in certain respects about putting a team in Orlando, for example, where there's only one other professional team. And I do think that it has grown into a solid community foundation, and that's why you see, like, strong attendance figures. You know, Kansas City is incredible, to name another venue. And so it has grown in that regard, and that's something that they can build off of.
So let's talk about why people should be watching this 21st season of Major League Soccer. Guys, what intrigues you the most about this upcoming MLS season?
Well, you know, I'm liking the Galaxy. I'm a Galaxy fan, but so of course I'm going to like the Galaxy. But I think that Bruce Arena has put together a pretty interesting team, and I've watched them in the last two CONCACAF Champions League games in which they were eliminated 4-0 on aggregate, basically got blown out of the water by Santos. But I think that you're gonna, it's the Bruce Arena team. It's gonna take a little bit of time, and I think it's gonna come along at the right time. And you know, people are talking about it like potentially the greatest lineup of an MLS team ever. So I'm excited to see that. I'm excited to see Toronto. I'm excited to see what Giovinco brings, and some of these designated player guys, big guys like Gerrard and Lampard and Pirlo, who came in sort of mid-season last season. Now that they've had a full preseason under their belts, are they going to be better this year?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's to see Patrick Vieira, right? See how he does as a manager. I wouldn't necessarily call it a big job, but it is the biggest job he's had. It's his first real foray into this, onto the sidelines in a public sphere, so to speak. I'm curious to see what new signings the MLS makes. I mean, there's been some talk about Tim Howard potentially coming over. I think it would be a good signing. I think goalkeepers in the past have done well that have come over towards the end of their career, especially American goalkeepers. So yeah, I mean, I think I like the growth of the league. You know, Alex mentioned the Galaxy. I think that Giovanni Dos Santos, I think he has the potential to be a superstar because of his Mexican background and the fact that he is still a young player that has a lot of ability. Last year, you know, he kind of came mid-season and had some injury issues too, but if he stays healthy, I think that he can have a lot of success and a lot of joy in the league, and he could be one of those potential Giovinco-style MVPs where I think he can just score goals regularly in this league and really kind of build up the league with an audience that is actually willing to invest their time and actually watch the league on television if you want to talk about it.
I'm curious to see if this is the year that people stop saying the MLS.
But, as I just did.
Me too.
You know, Patrick Vieira is a story that bears watching. I had a sit down with him a little while ago, and I've got to be honest, I came away from that entirely unconvinced that he knows what he's doing or that he's prepared for the job. But, and this is going to sound slightly nerdy, but what I think is always really fun with MLS seasons is the ongoing battle between front office strategies. And that's to say, you've still got teams that think that the way to build an MLS team is to sign a bunch of famous players and then to sprinkle in a few guys, whoever you can get around them. And then at the same time, you know, consistently you've seen, and even the Galaxy kind of built a spine before they started dropping in these big names, that the teams that kind of built a team and then wherever they had big gaps sort of filled them with their designated players have done better. And I've always found that sort of interplay between those two really, really interesting. I mean, last year, again, you had the teams that did well, you know, the Red Bulls, Portland, the Columbus Crew, FC Dallas were teams that built from within and that built sound soccer teams, you know, and they did a lot better than the clubs like Toronto FC and like New York City FC in particular that just kind of went after the big stars and then figured they'd work on the rest later. So, you know, that's maybe a bit of a niche angle to it, but that's what I'm always looking for.
I am eager to see how Patrick Vieira can get Andrea Pirlo and Frank Lampard to coexist. I heard rumors that they were trotting out maybe a 4-3-3. I felt bad for the other midfielder who has to do all the running for Pirlo and Lampard. And for the Galaxy, it's the same question about their midfield. You know, I want to be fair to Steven Gerrard. These are essentially preseason games that they played in the CONCACAF Champions League. But last summer, the Galaxy were rolling teams with a midfield of Stefan Ishizaki, Juninho, Baggio Husidic, and Sebastian Legette, who was a great find, a player from West Ham and came home. He's a Bay Area boy. And when Gerrard and Dos Santos showed up from that win over NYCFC, it went downhill immediately after that. And I'm not going to put that, you know, solely on those guys, but the Galaxy were broken after that. And I want to see how Bruce Arena can get, you know, with these new pieces with Nigel de Jong and you know, and Ashley Cole in the back line, and I want to call him Jean-Claude Van Damme, but it's a yellow Van Damme as the replacement for Omar Gonzalez. I want to see how he can work these guys in and be that title contender that they were for so long. And how much longer can Robbie Keane really produce? And he looked, again, this is preseason, but can he duplicate or continue to do what he's been doing ever since he got into the league?
I think, you know, those are all interesting points. You know, everyone seems to be talking ad nauseum about Toronto FC and their revamp in the back in the midfield. So I won't go there necessarily. And I also won't go in on the Columbus Crew's hideous away kits that they introduced a few days ago, I believe it was. I think the Jordan Morris story is going to be fascinating. You know, you look at the arc that has really drawn attention in MLS recently with players. It's the Clint Dempseys and the Michael Bradleys that plied their trade overseas for a long time, but decided to come home and you know, where they still had something left to offer in Europe, but they decided to come home and ply their trade in America for big dollars. Well, now it's a little bit inverted. Morris is only 21, I believe, just got out of Stanford, just signed the richest homegrown player contract they've ever had, and while it's not the millions of dollars that those other stars I mentioned are making, it is a big sum of money for him early in his career, and Europe is still ahead of him if he wants it. You know, he turned down Werder Bremen ultimately in the Bundesliga. Time will tell if that was a good move or a bad move. Seems like, you know, a move that's going to work out for him because he might have his pick of bigger clubs, no offense to Werder Bremen if you're listening, in the future. And I think that watching his arc is going to be fascinating because the expectations, we all know they're going to be unfair. If he doesn't score 2 goals a game, you know, people will be hammering him for it and, you know, oh, look what your money bought, that kind of stuff. But his story, I think, is going to be fascinating to watch, not just from that perspective, but also as a U.S. men's national team fan. And if he can really become kind of like a dynamite striker that Josie Altidore was for 2013 and then kind of tapered off and we never really had, I think that's going to be something that's really going to be really interesting to watch.
Guys, we have time to give our predictions. Let's go straight to who's going to win MLS Cup. Who wants to start first? Alex, you
sure.
Want to go?
Sure. I think Los Angeles Galaxy.
No way.
Go figure. I'm taking a big risk on my prediction. But I do think they're putting together quite a team, and I think Bruce Arena knows how to win this competition. And, yeah, I see Galaxy winning the league. And do you want my supporter shield prediction?
Sure, yeah.
I'm going to go SC Dallas on that one.
All right. Leander?
Somebody's going to make me look stupid with this in 9 months, but I'm going to go out very far on half a limb and say I think Toronto FC is going to win MLS Cup. I think the New York Red Bulls will retain the supporter shield because they lost Matt Miazga, but they signed some other defenders and they got some guys back to health. They won it last year. They were good last year in their first year under a new system. And they've kind of brought everybody back, and they're just as strong. So I think they win their third supporter shield in 4 years.
I'll go with Toronto winning the supporter shield and Galaxy winning the MLS Cup. So I just think Bruce Arena is a hell of a manager, or sorry, heck of a manager for being for the kids in the, listening in
podcast.
But, yeah,
hey, you know, JJ Redick's been cussing on his podcast, so it's completely fine.
Yeah, this is great.
That's you know what? That's where I take my cues from, JJ Redick.
I take mine from Brian Scalabrine personally. I'm going to go with I'll tip Red Bulls for supporter shield, and that's kind of ironic because I'm going to say FC Dallas has depth. They've got ability. They're just kind of robust with the things that you need to win it. So I'll say FC Dallas, which is weird because that, you know, they'll be losing to the Red Bulls here shortly.
That leaves me. I am going to go for MLS Cup. I'm going to go with the Seattle Sounders, and it's not because of Jordan Morris. I know he's going to replace Obafemi Martins, or try to replace him up top. But I think Jovan Jones coming over Chicago at left back, if he's going to be a great addition, you know, bombing up and down that left side, I think he's going to add something special to the Sounders attack. For the Supporter Shield, I am going to go with Toronto FC. You know, I think Giovinco. I was going to go with the Impact, but I don't know how many games Drogba is actually going to play. If he plays 20, I think the Impact will feel lucky, feel fortunate. Look, Jose Altidore came in early for the January camp. He looked fresh. He scored in both friendlies. I know that's making a lot out of friendly games for the USMNT. But I think with him and Michael Bradley really having a reason to, you know, get into the top form with the Copa America Centenario coming up, that I think that's really going to be a driving force along with Giovinco for TFC. Guys, that's all the time you got. Thanks for joining us. I'm Joe Lago for Alex Baker, Joey Galino here in the Playa Vista podcasting room. And the guys on Skype, Leonard Sharlakins, Shahan Ahmed, thanks for listening. We will talk next time. Thanks. This is for the world. This is for the globe. This
message for my people. Kick off, kick off, kick off, kick off. Yeah, kick me a goal.